software about? Free software means software that respects the user's freedom and the social solidarity of the user's community. Software which is not free, we call in English proprietary software, but in Spanish we call it privativo, which means it deprives the user of his freedom. In French we call it privateur, logiciel privateur, for the same reason. So I ask the translators to please use those terms. Nobody has found such a good term in English yet. And I can't help at all with Portuguese. So, proprietary software keeps the users divided and helpless. Divided because they are forbidden to share copies, and helpless because they don't have the source code. So they can't change anything. They can't even study independently what the program is doing. And it's very common for these programs to have malicious features, to do things like spy on the user, restrict the user, even in her use of her own files in her own machine. And there are even back doors designed to attack the user. One program, proprietary program, you may have heard of, that has all three of those, is called Microsoft Windows. We know of spy features. We know of digital restrictions management features, or DRM, also called digital handcuffs. And it has a back door that Microsoft can use to forcibly install changes in software without asking permission from the supposed owner of the machine. I say supposed because if Windows is running in the machine, Microsoft has taken total control of that machine. Somebody else might think he owns it, but not really. But it's not just Windows that does this. Another example is a product referred to as an ebook reader. Now, what are ebooks? Ebooks are an attempt to eliminate the traditional freedoms of readers. Freedoms to do things like lend a book to your friend, borrow it from the public library, sell it to a used bookstore, buy it anonymously, paying cash, and even the freedom to keep the book as long as you like and read it as many times as you like and eventually pass it on to your children. Those freedoms the publishers wish to take away from us, and ebooks are the method they use because they come with digital restrictions management, DRM, designed to take away all those freedoms. One of these products is called the Kindle. Kindle means set fire to. That's what it's meant to do to our books. And that product has the same three malicious features. It forces people to identify themselves in order to buy books. It has digital restrictions management, restricting what they do with their own files that they've bought. And it has a back door. We found out about the back door a few weeks ago when Amazon remotely commanded these products to erase all copies of a certain book. And which book was it? 1984 by George Orwell. The most ironic possible choice. Amazon erased people's books remotely. Of course, There was a lot of bad press for that. So Amazon said, we won't do it again, but they'll still have the power to do it, and nobody should have to depend on a company's goodwill to be able to keep and read his books. But how can you make sure there aren't malicious features in a program? The only way is to do something. It's the only defense our society has ever found against malicious features. You see, free software means you get four essential freedoms. Freedom zero is the freedom to run the program as you wish. Freedom one is the freedom to study the source code and change it to make the program do what you wish. Freedom two is the freedom to redistribute exact copies of the program. That's the freedom to help your neighbor. And freedom three is the freedom to contribute to your community, the freedom to distribute copies of your modified versions when you wish. If the program gives you all four of these freedoms adequately, then it's free software, because the social system that for its distribution and use is an ethical system, one that respects freedom and social solidarity. But if one of these freedoms is missing or inadequate, then the program is proprietary software, because it imposes an unethical social system on its users. The practice of using a proprietary program is a social problem. The existence of that software is a social problem. To develop a free program is more or less a contribution to society. How much? That depends on the details. But developing a proprietary program is not a contribution, it's a power grab. That program operates as a trap, attracting people to give up their freedom. If the program is useful in some purely practical sense, that's the bait for the trap. The more attractive this unethical program is, the worse a threat it poses to freedom in society. So if you have the choice between developing a proprietary program and doing nothing, it's better to do nothing. At least that way you're not doing any evil. Of course, really your choice would be to do some other kind of work which might be constructive, much better than doing harm by developing a proprietary program. Now, as you can see, this issue is not a technical issue. Whether a program is free or proprietary is not a question of what the code does. The same code could be released either way. And sometimes the same code is released both ways in parallel. This is a social, ethical, and political question. Thus, the goal of the free software movement is that all software be free, so that all users can be free. And the only way to make all users of software free is to provide them with free software to do everything and get rid of proprietary software from the world. Now, maybe it's too much to hope for that we will ever totally eliminate proprietary software. After all, we can't totally eliminate various other social problems, such as robbery and corruption and poverty, but we can at least try to make them much smaller. But why are these four freedoms essential? Well, freedom too is essential for basic moral reasons, so that you can live an upright ethical life as a good member of your community. If you use a program without freedom too, the freedom to help your neighbor, the freedom to redistribute exact copies, then you are in danger of falling into a moral dilemma at any moment. It could happen at any time when your friend says, "This program is nice, could I have a copy?" At that moment, you will have a choice between two evils. One evil is to give your friend a copy and violate the license of the program. The other evil is to refuse your friend a copy and comply with the license of the program. Well, if that's your choice, you should choose the lesser evil, which is to give your friend a copy and violate the license of the program. But why is that evil the lesser? Because when it's inevitable to do wrong to somebody, it's better to do wrong to somebody who deserves it. Because he has done wrong himself. So we can assume your friend is a good friend, a good member of your community, and normally deserves your cooperation. But by contrast, the developer of the proprietary program has deliberately attacked the social solidarity of your community. So if you have to do wrong to one or the other, do it to the developer. But being the lesser evil does not mean it's good. It's never good to make an agreement and break it. Not even in cases where the agreement is inherently evil and keeping it is worse than breaking it, still breaking it's not good. And if you give your friend a copy, what will she have? She will have an unauthorized copy of a proprietary program. And that's a pretty nasty thing. Almost as nasty as an authorized copy would be. So when you understand this dilemma, what should you really do? You should refuse to have a copy of the program. It's either that or don't have any friends. But I think it's better not to have a copy of the program. So when someone offers me a program, no matter how attractive and convenient it might be, on the condition I refuse to share it, I say my conscience does not permit me to accept those conditions, so take your nasty program out of here. That's what you should do too. And we also have to reject and denounce the propaganda terms that they use to demonize cooperation. Terms like pirate. When they call people who share pirates, what do they really say? They are trying to trick us into accepting, without question, the idea that sharing with your neighbor is the moral equivalent of attacking a ship. Now, I don't think that's true. In fact, ethically speaking, that's as false as anything could be, because attacking ships is very bad, but helping your neighbor is correct. So don't call them pirates. Refuse. If someone else calls them pirates, argue. If someone asks me what I think of piracy, I say, attacking ships is very bad. If somebody asks me what I think of software piracy or music piracy, I say, from what I've read, the pirates don't attack using computers or by playing instruments very badly. Although the latter might work, but it would take too long. Instead, they use arms. So their piracy is not software piracy or music piracy, just piracy. Be on guard against those tricks. People ask you a question with a propaganda term, and the easiest thing for you to do, if you're not careful, is to respond using the propaganda term or accepting it as meaningful and valid. And then you've scored an own goal. Be careful. So that's the reason for freedom too, the freedom to help your neighbor. The other freedoms are essential so you can control your computing. Obviously, you need to be free to run the program however you wish. I heard about a proprietary program for managing a website whose license said you're not allowed to use the program to publish articles that criticize the developer. The license could restrict you in any sort of way. Don't accept that. You must be free to run the program however you wish. That's freedom zero. But it's not enough, because that means you're free to either do or not do whatever the code actually permits, which means that the developer still can impose his decisions on you through the code of the program. To control your own computing, you also need freedom number one, the freedom to study and change the source code. This means you decide what the program does and not the developer. This is essential, but it's still not enough, because if this is all the freedom you have, you would have to make all the changes personally. And the only way you could check the source code would be to check it personally. Well, there are millions of people who use computers but don't know how to program. They can't do this at all, personally. But even a programmer like me can't do it all personally, because there's so much free software already in the world. No one person can study all that software, source code, and master it. It's too much work for one. So we must be free to do this work together, cooperating. And for that, we need freedom three, the freedom to contribute to your community, the freedom to distribute copies of your modified versions. So this way we can cooperate. Some people can release a free program, and then someone else can start with that and make an improvement and release that modified version. And someone else can start with that and add more and release that modified version, and so on. And we all get the benefit from the versions that they choose to release. So, the result is that the users have control of their computing, both individually and collectively. Users can individually control their computing using freedom one, but users collectively control their computing because a free program developed democratically under the control of its users. Any user can participate as much as he chooses in society's decision about the future development of the program, which is simply the sum total of all the various users' decisions of what to do with this program. By contrast, a proprietary program develops under the dictatorship of the developer, because the developer has total control over the code of the program. And thus the program functions as an instrument to impose the developer's power over the users, whom he can then exploit, bully, and mistreat. So society faces a choice. With free software, society has individual freedom, social solidarity, and democracy. With proprietary software, you are under the rule of the feudal lord, the developer of that program, and freedom is not possible. So society should choose free software. That's what I mean. Society should choose free software and reject proprietary software. And the goal of the free software movement is the liberation of cyberspace and all its inhabitants. I hope you will all join in the campaign to bring this about. Now, what does this imply for governance? Above all, the government of any state has a mission to set up society for the freedom and well-being of its citizens. That applies to all areas of life. In regard to computing, what it means is government must move society from the path of subjugation to the path of freedom. Government must take effective measures to switch society away from proprietary software. But in particular, government agencies, when they use computers, have a responsibility to maintain their control of their computing. Now, if you or I lose control of our computing, that is an injustice to us. It's a shame because we have been hurt. But if a government agency loses control of its computing, that's worse than just harm to the agency. That's dereliction. Because every government agency has a responsibility to maintain control over its computing, to make sure it can do the computing right. Because government agencies don't do computing for their own benefit, they do it for the citizens. So they have not just the right to control their computing, they have the duty to control their computing. They must never run a proprietary program. Because running a proprietary program means you have lost control of your computing. Anytime a proprietary program is run in a government agency, that agency has failed in its responsibilities. I'm sad to note that many agencies have failed in this way, and it calls for firm and persistent and determined efforts to correct these problems. I know it will take time, but 10 years from now, there should be no proprietary software in use in any government agency in this country, or any other, of course. It's the same issue no matter where you are. But, of course, there's an even more basic responsibility. When government agencies distribute software to the public, they must distribute it as free software, because they must respect the freedom of the citizens. So I'm very sad to mention that the government of Brazil distributes a proprietary program to citizens for them to file tax reports. And the Free Software Foundation of Latin America for several years has had a campaign called Software Imposto, which basically means people being forced to use proprietary software to pay their taxes. This is wrong, it's unjust, and there is absolutely no rational reason for it. The reasons given for making it proprietary software are ridiculous, because it communicates with a server, and the server should check that the calculations are consistent. It's ridiculous to try to check this in the client program. That can always be bypassed if someone wanted to try. So obviously you have to check in the server. And once you check in the server, it doesn't matter to check in the client. It's just totally unnecessary. There's no reason why people shouldn't be allowed to change that program. Of course, if they change the program to calculate wrong and they try to report their taxes with it, the server will say, there's something wrong with your figures. Maybe you're using a broken version of the program. Here's where you can find the official one. So there's no problem at all. There's Alexandre, who is responsible for this campaign. So every time a government agency distributes software to the public, it must be free software. And that includes JavaScript programs in web pages of the service that the government runs. They have to be free software too. It's a dangerous practice nowadays that web servers will sneakily install non-free programs into your computer without even telling you. They install these programs into your browser. And they're written often in JavaScript, but could be in other languages too. This is something we need to take action on, and the Free Software Foundation is trying to take action now. We've got somebody working on a program to detect non-trivial, non-free JavaScript programs in a web page and tell you this page is no good. But then we'll have to put pressure on the server operators that distribute these, saying, hey, I don't want to use a non-free program. I want you to make your server work without it, or else make it free. So the battle for free software started in 1983 when I announced a plan to develop a free software operating system called GNU. In 1992, the GNU system was mostly complete. One major essential component was still missing, and that was the kernel, which is the program that distributes the machine's resources to all the other programs you run. In 1992, Mr. Torvalds made his kernel, Linux, free software by re-releasing it under the free license, which I've written, which is called the GNU General Public License, or GNU GPL. And it's not the only free software license. There are many others. But this is the one I had written to use for the programs we were developing for the GNU system. So once Linux became free software, the combination of Linux and GNU was a complete free operating system. And that's when it became possible to buy a PC and run it in freedom. So as you can see, we've been working at this campaign for a long time. And we've made a lot of progress when you compare it with 1983, when it was impossible to buy a new computer and run it in freedom. All the operating systems for modern computers were proprietary. There was no way to get a computer and use it and have freedom. Well, now it's possible, and a lot of people have done it. but we have a lot more to do, and your help will contribute to the liberation of cyberspace. But freedom goes beyond just software. Freedom applies also to education. Now, these two issues meet nowadays because schools more and more have computers and teach their students to use computers. So, when schools have computers for their students to use, they must put only free software on those computers. All levels of school, starting from kindergarten to the university, must give and suggest only free software to their students. Because the school has a social mission, and that is to educate the next generation as good citizens of a strong, independent, cooperating, and free society. And in computing, that means teaching them to be users of free software. To teach proprietary software is to teach dependence. It's the exact opposite of the mission of the schools. Schools must never do this. And I'm sure you're aware that some proprietary software developers offer gratis copies of their non-free software to the schools. And why do they do this? It's the same reason tobacco companies used to hand out gratis cigarettes to kids, to make them addicts, to make them dependent. Except in this case, the developers want the schools to help. They offer the gratis copies to the schools so that the schools can teach their students to use these programs and become dependent. And then they'll graduate. And after they graduate, they are not offered free copies. Gratis copies, sorry. I should always make the distinction. They're not offered gratis copies anymore. And they go to work for companies. Those companies are not offered gratis copies. Because only the first dose is gratis. After you're dependent, then you have to pay. Well, the school would refuse to hand out tobacco to the kids, and it should refuse to hand out proprietary software for the kids to use also. But there's an even deeper reason, for the sake of education. Education of programmers. You see, some people are natural-born programmers. And at the age of 10 to 13, they become fascinated with computers, and they want to learn how everything works. But when our youth asks the teacher, how does this program do this? If it's proprietary, the teacher can only say, I'm sorry, I don't know, because it's a secret. And you're not allowed to find out. So education is not allowed. Proprietary software is the enemy of the spirit of education. And any school that allows it in is saying, really, we don't care about education here. Proprietary software should not be admitted into a school. Because a school is a place where people share knowledge. Proprietary software is secret knowledge withheld from society. It should not be allowed in a school. But there's an even deeper reason for moral education, because schools have to teach the spirit of goodwill, the habit of helping your neighbor, So every class should have this rule. Students, if you bring programs to class, you can't keep them for yourself. You must share copies with the rest of the class. And you must show the source code so the other students can learn how it works if they're interested. But the teacher has to set a good example. So the teacher has to follow the same rule. The teacher must bring only free software to class and share it with the students and show them the source code. Governments, of course, have a lot to say about what schools teach. And governments should use their authority to make sure that schools teach free software and not proprietary software. This is the most important thing for governments to do. It's even more important than migrating government agencies, because the schools will influence the next generation, either setting them into the path of dependency or the path of freedom and strength. But schools don't just teach software. Schools teach lots of things. And to do this, they use various educational works. Nowadays, some of them are programs, and obviously they should be free. But many of them are just books or videos. Well, those have to be free also. It took me a few years to realize this, but the same arguments for why software should be free also apply to educational works and reference works, and any works that are whose contribution to society is to help you do a practical job. So, educational works, they're very used for a practical job, learning or teaching. Their purpose is not just to be admired. They have a practical purpose. So the same reasons apply to them. The people using the work must have control over it. So they must be free to change it. And then, once you've changed it, you've got to be free to publish your version, because there may be others who would benefit from the same changes because the job they want to do is like the job you want to do. And likewise, reference works are used for a practical job. You use them to look up some information. Well, they also must be free. Now, educational books that are used in schools are mostly funded by the state. And the state should insist that its funds go into developing and then distributing works that are free, legal. However, this is not all kinds of works of authorship. There are other works whose purposes are not to do a practical job. They have other kinds of purposes. They contribute to society in other ways. For instance, there are articles of opinion whose contribution is to show what so-and-so thinks. And there are scientific papers whose purpose is to say what so-and-so saw. A scientific paper starts with the most important things, which are people's names. And it says, we did this and we saw that. Without those names, it would be worthless. It's their testimony. And then there are also works of art and entertainment whose contribution to society is in the impact they make on whoever looks at them. These are different kinds of contribution, and they lead me to different conclusions. I don't believe that it works as a community must be free to modify somebody else's statement of his opinions is to misrepresent that person. I don't think that's a contribution to society. To modify somebody else's scientific paper, well, that's just misrepresenting the research. That's not a contribution either. So my conclusion about works whose contribution is to say what certain people thought is everybody must be free to redistribute exact copies of these works, non-commercially. But I don't go further than that. So I don't say that they must be free. Because free means you get the four freedoms to use it as you like, change it, just redistribute exact copies, including commercially, and redistribute modified versions, including commercially. So that, I believe, is what's required for the works that do a practical, functional job. But for the other kinds of works, I think that the freedom to non-commercially redistribute exact copies is sufficient. But that's very important, because in the world today, we see people being persecuted for sharing. We see that the publishers are trying to impose on the world a war on sharing. And there is no limit to how far they are willing to go in the form of cruelty to try to crush people for sharing with other people. That war on sharing must be stopped and defeated, because sharing is good. Sharing creates the bonds of society. To attack sharing is to attack society. The cruel, draconian laws that are being pushed in so many countries are bad, not only because their methods are so cruel, but because their purpose is fundamentally evil, namely to stop people from sharing. Governments must legalize sharing, and they must get rid of anything that stands in the way of legalizing sharing, such as the free exploitation treaties that many countries have signed to the permanent injustice and victimization of their citizens. After all, these treaties' purpose is to prevent democracy from having power. These treaties are designed to transfer power from the state to the megacorporations. And it works in a cunning way. Just by allowing the companies to move their operations easily from one country to another, the result is that the companies have the superior power. If the people want to do something that the companies don't like, the companies tell the politicians, if you do this, we'll move to some other country. And the politicians then have an excuse why they can't do it. So the politicians say, oh, well, we need to attract jobs to this country. We can't possibly protect the environment or protect public health from this pollution or protect everybody's standard of living so everybody can live well. We can't do any of these things because, above all, we have to beg those companies to please come here. So we have to compete with every other country in the world to offer the worst possible working conditions so that the companies will come here. But we will put an end to the war on sharing with your help. Now, since the practice of digital handcuffs or digital restrictions management is a big danger nowadays, the Free Software Foundation has launched a campaign of public protests against DRM. You can find it in the site defectivebydesign.org. Please go to that site and sign up to participate in our protests. We need your help. We need to show big companies like Microsoft and Apple and Adobe and Amazon that if they try to impose DRM on the public, if they try to design their products to attack the public's freedom, they will be hated. And we have just this week launched a campaign against Windows 7, which is just as vicious as Windows Vista inside. They figure if they change the name and change a few cosmetic things and a few purely practical, unintended inconveniences, then maybe they can escape from the bad reputation of Windows Vista. It's up to us to make sure they don't succeed. This campaign is found in Windows7Sins.org. But you can find more information about the Free Software Foundation in FSF.org. And you can find the Free Software Foundation of Latin America in FSFLA.org. And you can find the website of the GNU Project in GNU.org. And please, when you're talking about using the operating system that is basically the result of our work, please don't call it Linux. Please call it GNU plus Linux. And that way you'll give the principal developer an equal share of the credit. And that's all we ask for. Saints, but no gods. Instead of gods, we worship an editor. To be a member of the Church of Emacs, you must recite the Confession of the Faith. You must say, there is no system but GNU, and Linux is one of its kernels. And then, if you become a real wizard, you can celebrate that with our ceremony called the Fubar Mitzvah, in which you stand in front of the community and recite lines of the system source code, which are what we have instead of holy books. We also have the cult of the Virgin of Emacs. The Virgin of Emacs is anyone who has not yet learned to use Emacs. And according to the Church of Emacs, giving the Virgin an opportunity to lose her Emacs virginity is a blessed act. The Church of Emacs has certain advantages compared with some other churches. For instance, to be a saint in the Church of Emacs does not require celibacy. But it does require living a life of moral purity. You must exorcise whatever evil proprietary operating systems have possessed computers under your control or set up for your use, and install a wholly free operating system. I pity the poor translators now. And then install and use only free software with and on the system. If you make this vow and you live by it, then you too will be a saint, and you too will have the right to wear a halo if you can find one, because they don't make them anymore. Sometimes people ask me whether it is a sin in the Church of Emacs to use the other editor, VI. It's true that VI is the editor of the beast. But using a free implementation of VI is not a sin, it's a penance. And sometimes I ask whether my halo is really an old computer disk. This is no computer disk, this is my halo. But it was a computer disk in a previous life. So thank you very much. I've got 100. Do I get 110? You He's overbidding himself. Okay, I got 110. Do I get 120? Do I get 120? I've got 120. Do I get 130? Do I get 130? I've got 130. Do I get 140? Do I get 140? I've got 140. Do I get 140? How much did you do? 150? I got 150. Do I get 160? 160? Do I get 160? I've got 160. I've got 170. Do I get 180? Do I get 180? I've got 170. I've got 180. Do I get 190? Do I get 190? Be careful, don't raise your hand if you're not bidding. I've got 200. Do I get 220? Do I get 220? I've got 200. Do I get 220? I've got 230. Do I get 250? I've got 230. Do I get 250? I've got 230. Do I get 250? I've got 250. Do I get 270? Do I get 270? I've got 250. Do I get 270? Do I get 270? I've got 250. Do I get 270? Last chance to bid 270 guys for this adorable video. I've got 300. I've got 300. Do I get 335? Do I get 335? I've got 300. Do I get 335? Do I get 335? By the way, do I get 335? Last chance to bid 335. I've got 300. Do I get 335? I've got 335. Do I get 365? Do I get 365? Do I get 365? I've got 335. Do I get 365? Last chance. Last chance to bid 365 and win this new. Do I get 365? 370. Okay, I got 370. Do I get 400? Do I get 400? Do I get 400? Last chance to win 400 to win this canoe. Do I get 400? Going, gone for 370.
So
So we can try it by voice.
Gente, nós temos microfones disponíveis no auditório. Quem quiser fazer perguntas, por favor.
Which channel is it?
Faça channel 4 for English, para que as pessoas que estejam ouvindo.
I'm not hearing any English on channel 4. Which channel should be English?
Hello?
Okay, now I hear you. Okay, well, we can try it this way.
It's me. Which ones would you say are the major threats to free software today?
There are many threats to free software today. One of them, well, the biggest obstacle we face is social inertia. You know, lots of companies already use proprietary software, lots of schools teach it, lots of websites make you use it if you want to talk to them, lots of certification programs insist that you should use it, governments distribute it to the people. He wasn't really going to pay. Well, I guess you won it at 3:35 because. you know, if this. Okay. So please talk with Alejandro about ways of paying. So social inertia is a big obstacle, and it's not just accidental. Of course, a lot of social inertia just happened, but some companies work very hard on creating more social inertia that then stops us from making progress. So how do you overcome social inertia? You just need firmness of will. It's not really that hard. It's just the people who don't care so much get discouraged. But if you are really determined to live in freedom, you can join us and we can overcome any amount of social inertia. But other big obstacles and threats include devices for which we can't write free drivers because it's a secret how to use the device. The manufacturer will sell you the device and they refuse to tell you how to use it. Now this is outrageous. And so we need to fight against this. And how do we do it? Well, one way is we need to organize to use our market power to refuse to buy those devices. And the Free Software Foundation has the hardware resource pages which tell about which devices do work with free software. In addition, we also need to do reverse engineering. And governments that want to restore their computing sovereignty and the freedom of their people can help do this by setting up centers to do reverse engineering and figure out how to run those devices so that we can write free drivers to run them. Now, another thing that governments can do is centralize their computer purchases and demand to buy only computer models that are 100% ready for free software. Now, if the Brazilian government did this, well, the simplest, most obvious way is just to say, we'll have a list of approved models. But that's not fully using its market power. What the government should really do is go to various companies and say, would you like to make a model that is 100% free software ready, and look how many we'll buy. But you have to promise to sell it to the public energetically too. We want the public to be able to buy computers that are 100% free software ready. So if you agree to make a model and sell it to the public, here's how many we'll buy, because we can't find one anywhere. But if you make one, you'll be the only one. And this would be really using the state's market power with the greatest possible effectiveness. And there are a lot of companies that would fall over themselves to make a free software-ready computer model of whatever kind is needed, just so that they would be able to sell to Brazil.
Alô, português.
I'm not finished yet. Another big threat comes from laws that prohibit free software. Now, right now in Brazil, the patent office is trying to start allowing software patents. This has been done already in many countries. Now, software patents are dangerous to all software developers. They are an absurd system in which any computing idea might be patented. And I'm going to be giving a speech at 7:30 this evening at, does anyone know the name of the law school where I'm giving the speech? I can't hear you. What? Brasilia University's Law School. I'm going to be speaking about the danger of software patents at 7:30. But basically, a large program combines thousands of ideas. If any one of those ideas can be patented, that means because you implemented it in your program, you could get sued. And if you gave him a copy for him to use, he could get sued too. So both you and your users can get sued for the ideas you put into the program. But if there are thousands of ideas in the program and 10% are patented, that means there are hundreds of different patents, each one giving somebody an opportunity to sue you and sue your users. It's a disaster, but the big companies want it. So they keep trying in various ways to mislead politicians and corrupt patent offices into giving them software patents. And they can make any program illegal. Meanwhile, there are other laws that can prohibit specifically free software. Namely, countries such as the US and all the countries in Europe have adopted laws prohibiting free software to break digital handcuffs. Now, DRM is usually implemented by a conspiracy of companies. To be implemented by just one company is a rare case. It's usually a conspiracy. For instance, in the case of the Kindle, which is meant to burn our books, Amazon implemented this in a conspiracy with publishers. They're working hand in hand. Now, these conspiracies of companies to restrict the public's access to technology ought to be punished with imprisonment, just as conspiracies to fix prices are punished. But instead, anti-democratic governments are doing the exact opposite. They're taking the side of the companies in the conspiracy against the public. So not only do they refuse to prosecute the executives who make these conspiracies, but they also forbid us to defend ourselves by censoring free software capable of accessing those media. So for instance, there is free software that can play a DVD, and it's censored in the US. The US has practiced censorship of software for 10 years. And in France, having a copy of that program is a crime for which they can imprison you. So it shows how totally the French state has chosen the side of the publishers against the citizens. And you will find that they try to impose these laws in every country over and over and over again. And there's another threat now, software as a service. Software as a service means that instead of doing your computing by running your copy of a program in your machine, you send your data to somebody's server, and it processes the data and sends you the result. In other words, you're doing your computing with his copy of a program in his machine. And even if that program is free software, you don't have control over his copy. He has control over his copy, and he should. He should have control over his copy, but he can't let you have control over his copy. If there are 1,000 users, they can't all have control over that one copy. So how can you have control of your computing? You have to refuse to use software as a service. The only way you can control your computing is if you do it with your copy of a free program. When you do that, you have the source code, and you can change it, and you can make the program do what you wish. Proprietary software imposes the developer's power over you because you don't get the source code. You just get the executable, which is very, very hard to understand and change. Well, software as a service goes one step further and doesn't even give you the executable. So you're even further away from control of your computer. So, next question.
Falou aqui em português, certo? Conceito de liberdade. Qual a sua opinião sobre essa informação de que até 2030 todos os bombardeiros, aviões que soltam bombas americanos, serão guiados por robôs? E recentemente no Brasil chegou a informação que o primeiro avião guiado por robô para soltar bombas usaria GNU Linux.
Well, first of all, I wonder, would be using Linux or would be using the GNU plus Linux operating system? Because whether or not you or I approve of the use, it's still the system we developed, and we still deserve credit for it. They're independent questions. But turning to the question of using free software in weapons, I don't necessarily think that's bad because I'm not a pacifist. Now, I think that some wars are justified and some are evil. In many wars I have taken a side, even though I didn't do anything other than speak my opinion. But there's a side I thought was right. And because I'm not a pacifist and I don't therefore believe that the use of arms is always wrong, I'm not in general against development of arms. Now, it's true that the United States often uses its weapons for wars of aggression, and I'm against that. But on the other hand, the countries that the United States might attack also use software. And I'm happy if they get some benefit from free software. But let's consider something that's always wrong. We can make a better example. What about torture? What about the use of free software to torture someone, you know, like making him edit all day with VI? Or what about using Emacs to edit, to send mail saying, go capture that person in that country and take him to Syria where they will torture him? Something which Obama refuses to say he won't do. Well, this is obviously always wrong, always inexcusable, no matter who's doing it. But would it be desirable for free software licenses to say it's not allowed to use this program for torture? That would be completely pointless, useless, and harmful. First of all, it wouldn't work. As we see from the example of the United States, any kind of legal prohibition on torture can just be ignored. Torture was already a crime in the US anyway. But W said, I want you to torture, so they tortured. And now Obama is protecting most of these torturers. We just found out they're probably going to investigate and prosecute the ones who went beyond the kinds of torture that the ringleaders said they should use. But the ones they are still protecting are the ringleaders, people like Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and anybody else involved in ordering the torture. Well, if they're going to ignore laws, they'll ignore a software license too. After all, how do we enforce a software license? We can only enforce it by going to court. And the government can legislate itself an exception. And anyway, in most countries, I don't think you can restrict the kind of use that is made of an authorized copy of a program using copyright. If people have the right to run the program, they can run it to do anything at all, even torture. So the only thing we would achieve by allowing such restrictions in our licenses would be to destroy the free software community, because you get dozens of different licenses, each one saying this program can't be used for this purpose. This program can't be used, for instance, in regard to serving animals as food, and this program can't be used for serving plants as food, and or anything but fruit. And you know, maybe a Jane programmer would write that. There's just nothing you can. We would soon find that there is nothing we can use the system for, because there's some program says you can't use it for that. So I'm not going to consider acceptable licenses with restrictions on the kind of use that's made. Basically, if you're going to start making ballpoint pens, you've got to realize people are going to write all sorts of things with them. And you can't try to solve the world's other problems by putting license conditions on your pens about what kinds of things people are allowed to write with. It's a general purpose tool that is going to be used for everything, even for things such as ordering torture, or fraud, or any kind of crime you can imagine. It's going to be used for them. And they're illegal anyway.
Meu nome é Rafael, sou de Leme, e eu gostaria de perguntar para o senhor como é que o senhor vê aí com a evolução da internet, o Linux voltado para a computação nas nuvens aí, essa nova tendência que a Google...
Sorry, when you say Linux, are you talking about the GNU plus Linux system, or are you talking about Linux 12 kernel?
You know what, Linux? Desculpa, é Mariano.
I forgive you. So, continue with the question, please.
Eu gostaria de saber sobre a relação do Gnu Linux com a computação das nuvens aí, a evolução da internet.
Eu gostaria de aproveitar para lembrar que temos cerca de 10 minutos ainda disponíveis. E para essa extensão, a gente vai fazer uma homenagem ao Sr. Stallman.
Homenagem?
So, but anyway, but I won't use the term cloud computing because it's a very nebulous term. It means basically anything anybody ever did with the internet. And that's too broad to be useful to say anything about. I use the internet to send email. I don't see anything wrong with that. I have a way of looking at web pages. I don't see anything wrong with publishing and looking at web pages. I log into other computers. I don't see anything wrong with that. There are a lot of things you can do with the internet that I don't see any problem in. There are a few specific things which I see a problem in. I already explained the danger of distributing non-free JavaScript programs to the user, and the danger of software as a service. Now, these are more specific concepts. When we focus on more specific practices, we can start to have meaningful opinions about them. Software as a service, cloud computing is just too vague. It includes all those things I mentioned. And maybe other things too, about which I might have an opinion if you were to describe them to me. Next question.
There is a bill in the Senate at this moment that is a major step towards prohibiting anyone without a graduate degree in computer science or so from writing or modifying software. What would you suggest legislators to do with this bill?
Vote against it. It's a threat to freedom of expression. It's intolerable. Oh, I should mention something that I forgot to mention. Alexandre has some copies of my book of essays to sell on behalf of Free Software Foundation Latin America. Will people be able to come to you after this is finished? That's Alejandro. So, next question.
Eu queria emendar uma pergunta com a do Alexandre. Eu até queria estar falando aqui com a gente sobre o Alexandre.
Jump up and wave your arms a lot.
Eu gostaria de perguntar sobre a distribuição do software livre junto das grandes empresas IBM e como CD de recuperação do sistema.
Recovery something? The translator couldn't understand.
Recovery system.
I don't know what a recovery system is. I'm sorry, it's not a term I know. Distributing free software to large companies, well, if they are going to exist, I hope they use free software. If company A exists and uses computers, there's nothing good about letting company B have power over company A through company A's computers. Company A should be using free software. Now, of course, there are other issues we can raise about what's good or bad about what that company does. I think the existence of very large companies is dangerous to society, and I think we need to take steps to cause them not to be there anymore. But that's a different issue. There's simply nothing good about giving company B control over company A's computers in any case. But recovery systems, I have no idea what that is. Sorry. Next question?
Yeah. First of all, I'd like to sorry about this issue. I do not sell apartments that way.
Well, you shouldn't have bid if you weren't seriously going to pay. In some other auctions, they would have made you pay. Well, and they would have taken you to court.
My question is, you talk about...
Well, we wouldn't want your parents anyway.
My question is, you're talking about Microsoft and about the priority software and something like that. So,
sorry, about what?
About the software, Microsoft, Windows.
Right, now I heard you, yeah.
So, you said that, man, in this case, you cannot, so, you know, like, can you install a corporation, like any one of them? So, if you need help for that, you can buy it from assistance. So you have to pick two times for choose Windows.
Well, I think what you're saying is confused. Free software provides unbundled support. That is, you can buy support wherever you want to. It's a free market for support. By contrast, support for proprietary software is generally a monopoly, because only the developer can change the program. So if you need anything changed, there's only one entity that can change it for you. And that entity is likely to abuse this monopoly because it's greedy, right? It's a company. What does a company do with a monopoly? It exploits the monopoly as much as it can. There are some proprietary software companies that tell you that you have to pay for any technical support, even though you pay to not own a copy of the program. And it's quite common for proprietary software developers to say in their licenses, we're not liable for anything that goes wrong in this program. So the fact is, you're no better off with proprietary software as far as support is concerned. Just the opposite. With free software, you're not stuck in a monopoly. So if you're getting bad support, you can change to someone else.
Yeah, but in this case, we can see that if you have Linux.
It's not Linux.
Sorry about that. But if you have a Linux source or free software, so you have to develop a business. It's for free, right?
Well, yes, there's no need to pay a fee to run the program.
Yeah. But if I put this in my corporation, my enterprise, and I have all my programs running inside of that, And I have to develop for it. I have to develop
yes.
a system for a DNI.
Yes. Well, yes or no, because you could write in a portable way. There are languages which are portable and the programs you write can run on various systems.
But in my opinion, I have to understand.
All
the system, including GNU, including Linux, including Windows.
GNU and Linux are an operating system together, which is, you can compare with Windows.
So, for understand, every kernel, everything, and develop for every kind of product, for every kind of solution.
No, you're wrong. That's not true. There are hundreds of distributions of GNU/Linux, but when you write a program, you don't have to think about which distribution it's going to run on. Almost all application programs, they'll run on all of them. It's the same. And there are also portable platforms so that you can write programs that would run both on GNU/Linux and on Windows, as well as BSD. And, you know, it's not that hard.
We're looking to, that's better, to understand every operation system, like you're part of Apple or GNU.
Well, I see no reason I wouldn't bother. When I write a program, I don't bother to make it run on proprietary systems. Because they're unethical anyway, and they shouldn't be used. But if you want to make a program run on multiple systems, you can.
Okay,
I think it's time for the next person.
Olha lá, ele está com a mão do meu lado.